Hello, and welcome back to another episode of All Good in the Brotherhood Podcast, the podcast of the Benedict Project. I am Brother Francisco Whitaker, deacon and monk of St. Vincent Archabbey in La Trobe, Pennsylvania, and I am joined over the phone by my compatriot, who it's been a bit since you've been on the podcast, my dude, Nate. How are you doing?
It sure has been, dude. I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
You know, living the dream, you know, being a deacon in a parish has been pretty great.
Yeah, how is that, bro?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, my parish is really lively and there's just lots going on, which I will get into more in the future. But for now,
100%.
Actually, we're going to just kind of dive into today's episode. But no, I appreciate the ask and the interest. But I actually have a YouTube video I'm working on that's actually talking about that. So don't want to spoil it for anyone. But speaking of which, actually, there's a little bit of something from being a deacon that I kind of wanted to talk about today, which was a homily topic I gave that, like, after I've been reflecting on it more, and just I think it's really important, which is the danger of complacency in the spiritual life.
Or you mean maybe in the ravaging of the spiritual life?
Yeah, honestly. It's the end, the death. It's complacency kind of in any area leads to, like, the end of it, you know? Honestly, more nefarious, too, than just, like, simply cutting something out of your life is to grow complacent in it, and it slowly fades away. Based on – and part of this homily was based on the readings from that Sunday, but kind of the core and what I want to talk to you about is – a short passage from the Screwtape letters, where Wormwood receives a letter from Screwtape, where he, I guess Wormwood has been saying, like, he wants to get his patient to do these great big sins, you know, like murder or adultery or something that, like, would make the demons
relish. Right,
the
kind of dramatic, flashy ones.
Yes, yeah, right, which is honestly, like, what a lot of people base their examination of conscience on, and then they realize, like, oh, I haven't done anything bad, so, like, I'm a good person. Which is not, but
and anything bad, the way people often seem to refer to it nowadays, has basically been reduced to genocide or some form of radical evil. Like, oh well, you know, I'm not someone like Hitler or something like that. It's just the standards have been so lowered that being a good person, not only is it not having done anything bad, but even quote the phrase, doing anything bad has been gradually just watered down until it's something that, yeah, some act of violence against somebody, that's bad for sure. So, but as long as you generally avoid something that could very blatantly affect somebody else's physical safety, you're probably a pretty good person, right? You're generally going to heaven.
Yeah, exactly. So they kind of then we get lulled into kind of this complacent, numb state where if I'm not doing anything egregiously wrong, or if I'm doing, like, most everything right, then I'm fine. I don't really need to grow more. I don't really need to do more. I'm kind of doing enough.
Right.
And Screwtape says, you know, you don't really need a human to commit a bunch of great sins to get them to hell. In fact, it's actually better to not, because if they do commit great sin, well, yes, maybe that's, like, really, like, fun for the demons, or, like, it might create more chaos. Immediately, you might actually call the person to realize, like, how sinful they are and they need to repent. Versus if we just kind of are lulled with, like, these little complacencies here and there, these little cutting corners here and there, half measures, he said, you'll hopefully get your patient to say what one of my own did when he came to hell, which is when his patient says, I realized that I spent most of my life doing neither what I ought nor what I liked.
Yeah.
And that's complacency. And, you know,
incredible quote, by the way.
I know. That's
the summary of modern day sin.
Oof.
It's not interesting at all. It's not enjoyable. It's purely boring and dehumanizing complacency.
So I wanted, I wanted to tackle kind of three areas of complacency that I think are, two of them are rooted in the third, but are complacency in relationship, complacency in morality, and complacency in, like, in particularly the spiritual life, which I think the other two kind of are born out of a complacency in the spiritual life. We're just kind of like going to get like right at this. What do you think are, you know, like I was hearing kind of recently, that aside from like the first 5 years of marriage, a lot of marriages tend to dissolve, not in like the middle era, but kind of, like later, like, when parents become empty nesters again and they're faced to be with each other, that now all of a sudden they realize they have to like talk to each other and like learn how to be married again, almost in a sense.
They can't use the children as sort of the medium or the distractions from their own marriage.
Yeah. And then things kind of fizzle out. So
yeah,
to me, that's an example of what I would consider complacency in relation. But I would, before I talk about what I was thinking, what do you see, as kind of the, what that would mean, like complacency in relationship, and how that is so common kind of everywhere, and what that really like looks like.
Right. Well, this is very sort of obvious and commonly used phrase. I would say commonly, but I also don't think it's overused. It's just, it all comes down to communication. That's not a super theological abstract idea. That's really just psychology and interpersonal relationships 101, where basically, yeah, if you're not making the bare minimum effort to communicate to somebody else, and not just communicate about, you know, generic menial things, but communicate at some somewhat deeper level to actually get to know them on a deeper level, then that's the minimum. You can't expect that there's going to be deeper love or deeper communion between you and that other person. So I think there's, again, that's sort of a bit of psychology or marital advice that people throw out, even in the secular world. But I think it does have ramifications even for the spiritual life, that when it comes to relation with somebody else, the bare minimum starting point is some level of communication. And so if you're failing in that, then you know right away you're already in some sort of form of complacency. Because I'm not saying it's the bare minimum in the sense that it requires no effort. It does require effort. It's impressive. It's good in itself if you are doing that. But if you're not doing that, it is a source of complacency and a sign of complacency. And we see that also with our relationships with God.
Right.
For us, in relation to God, our form of communication is prayer. And so if we're at some point in our lives where we need to ask ourselves, am I complacent in my life right now, or am I truly chasing after sainthood? Well, a simple way to answer that is just to look at, okay, are you engaging in mental prayer and daily prayer? If the answer is no, then it's not some complicated science. It's not rocket science. You don't have to psychoanalyze yourself and think, well, maybe on some deep level, I'm still communing with God. It's like, no, if the answer is no to the question of, are you engaging in mental prayer? Then yeah, you're in a state of complacency and you're not deepening your relationship. And the nice side of that is there's a pretty easy solution, which is if you want to take a step out of complacency and take a step towards freedom and joy and a more vibrant relationship, you can just start that communication. If it's with God, you can start prayer. If it's with another human being, you can just start having more human conversations that are maybe less surface level and also just more frequent.
And communication requires the listening aspect, which I think one could fall into the trap to think I'm a communicator because I'm telling people things, you know, I'm talking to God, or like I'm telling my children to do something, or I'm telling my spouse, you know, I'm saying things, but I haven't stopped to listen to them. Because the word communication starts with cum, right, which comes from cum in Latin, which means to be with. So there's like, there's with transmission, you know, so it's both and we could be very complacent in listening, like, I'm not going to hear anything worthwhile, you know, or if God tells me something, it's not really going to change my life. I don't really want to hear what God has to say. I think the underlying issue with complacency is the kind of fundamental belief that, like, I'm fine where I'm at, or like, this is about as good as it's going to get.
Right.
And so I see like complacency in relationship also when there is strife or difficulty, but maybe it's not like fully blown into like an absolute like fallout, but like, oh, like I guess this relationship will just kind of only ever be meh, you know? Like it's not bad, it's not good. We kind of like reasonably tolerate each other. And I think a lot of families like kind of slip into this. And friendships kind of do too, you know, if you have a good friendship, but then like distance, or time kind of keeps you apart, you might have some communication, but the depth of it starts to dissolve. So you kind of get to the point of like, well, I guess like I talk to them or I hang out with them a bit, but it's not the same. And I guess that's as good as it's going to be anymore.
Yeah, it's sort of like a tolerated mediocrity where
Yeah,
you just resign
exactly.
yourself to it.
And especially when there has maybe been hurt in the past, and what would require like moving past that is either asking for forgiveness or extending forgiveness. We can become so complacent with giving and receiving forgiveness. So it's like, well, I mean, like, yeah, I guess I forgive them, or like, I'm not really care anymore. You know, it's kind of like whatever. But like, I don't really want to be around them, or I don't want to see them. And just yeah, kind of settling for, eh, this is good enough, or this is as good as it's going to be. And Jesus doesn't want it to. When he came to the earth, he didn't say, "I came that you might have a good life, right? Or that you might feel good enough about your life. I came that you might have life to the full." And if we want to have life to the full, that means we're constantly moving out of an area where we're comfortable into an area that we're uncomfortable. And forgiveness is often a very uncomfortable thing, either asking for it or extending it, because maybe now I have to let go of something, or I have to admit that I did wrong. But either way, doing one of those things moves us in the opposite direction of a complacency where it's kind of like, eh, whatever. And sitting in that kind of good enough, like you said, like a tolerated mediocrity. Mediocrity definitely went kind of in the second area of complacency and morality. We were talking about earlier about like kind of people like, ah, oh, this sin, whatever. It's not like the worst. It's not the best. I'm just kind of like whatever. Is just like this kind of like really bizarre kind of acceptance, like social acceptance of like certain sins. Or like everyone has like their socially accepted, like, you know, what it's like, oh, what's your what's
Guilty pleasure.
yeah, exactly. There we go. Yeah. What's your guilty pleasure? That's a like allowed. So people are like, oh, it's kind of food, or it's binging TV, or I drink a little bit too much. I'm Irish.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of excuse an entire realm of vice because it's just acceptable for you because of your society or because of the kind of culture you are a part of. And sorry, real quick before you continue, I just wanted to acknowledge how good of a point that is because what's really interesting with that is that for one thing, it sets the bar extremely low, but it also encourages this approach to life in general, where you're not focused and you're not striving towards any goals on a consistent level. Like when people ask about guilty pleasures, even if they're not literally talking about something sinful, they might just be talking about something like, giving into sweets whenever they don't really feel like they should, but and they know better and they know it's not good for their health, but they just can't help it. Or, you know, like you said, maybe having one too many drinks, whatever it is, things that aren't necessarily always like sinful, they could go too far and become sinful. But in many cases, they're more just when people say guilty pleasure, they just mean what is the thing that you like doing that you know you shouldn't be doing? And the fact that like that's socially acceptable, even beyond the realm of sin, just the fact that we're so comfortable with the idea that, yeah, we just do things we know we shouldn't be doing. We're comfortable with cognitive dissonance. Is such a bad sign for our culture. Like that's case in point complacency is I think that's part of complacency is having this vague notion and awareness that you really shouldn't be doing what you're doing, or you really should be doing something that you're not currently doing. And yet responding to that little vague notion by saying like, I don't really care. Like, this is where we are. That's okay.
And believing kind of the lie that this isn't really hurting anyone, really, like, you know, yeah, I haven't murdered anyone, you know, like what's a couple extra drinks, or what's looking at porn on my phone, really, that's not hurting anyone. Like to kind of like believe that, you know, like I wouldn't do those like crazy bad things. But if it's something that, you know, yeah, it's probably not good, but it seems to like not really bother anyone else. Or especially when we don't necessarily immediately see the negative effect it has. It's like, oh,
Right.
maybe this isn't really that bad. Or we just tell ourselves it's not as bad so we can keep on doing it. Rationalizing bad behavior so we don't have to admit that it's bad is an absolute kind of MO of when we're giving into complacency. And
Yeah.
I don't want to speak or make it sound like I'm speaking from some moral high ground where I'm not a complacent person, because I am incredibly. So,
Oh,
in
I
my
fall into that all the
in my
time, 100%.
monastic life, there's been aspects of being super complacent. My novice master said that kind of in the course of monasticism, you know, you got that initial zeal as a novice where you're like doing the hard thing, you're setting yourself to waking up earlier than everyone else. You're constantly like trying to grow and challenge yourself. But then you kind of get comfortable or things get a little hard or it's not as exciting. And now it's kind of like, man, like there's monotony. And as soon as monotony sets in, or we believe that things are monotonous to us, then, and we don't have the same maybe joy or thrill that it once gave, we can become really complacent in doing them. So it's going through the motions like, well, I have to do this. Not that I want to do this or I get to do this. I have to. And as soon as we think we have to do something and we don't want to, man, we're not going to put any of our heart into it or any desire to be better at it. And in monasticism, I know like a couple of years into being a monk, I definitely was like, oh, man, like, you know, the prayer schedule or formation as a junior is like getting in the way of what I want to do, or like what I want to spend my time with. And that's such a complacency invocation that like, hello, you're going to be best when you're doing the things you're called to do, not the things that you want to do. And you will never want to do the things you're called to do unless you do them with a heart to grow for them. And that's kind of, I guess, bleeding into complacency in the spiritual life too. But whatever practice in the spiritual life we'd like want to avoid most, I think therefore becomes the one we need to do most because it'll challenge most growth. But I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. I'm kind of like spitballing a little bit, but.
No, you're good. I think you're absolutely right. And I think a common theme with a lot of what you're saying is like whether it's a task or a new development in your vocation or even just a new moment in your spiritual life, there's this sense of a choice between resigning yourself to something old and kind of familiar or diving into something new. And there's this beautiful scene in The Passion of the Christ, I think the most moving scene out of the whole movie, where he collapses under the weight of the cross while he's walking, you know, the Via Dolorosa. And Our Lady happens to be there and she comes to him and she embraces him and tries to help him up. And he looks at her. Oh my gosh, it's such a moving scene. I'm sure you know the one I'm talking about. And, you know, his face is just streaked with blood, the cross is pressing the crown of thorns into his skull, and he just looks at her with just like one eye because the other one is beaten beyond recognition and just totally swollen. And he looks at her and he says, "See, Mother, I make all things new." And of course, that's not a that general quote is not something that just Mel Gibson came up with. That is a quote from the scriptures that the Lord Jesus Christ is he who makes all things new. In each one of our lives, he makes each one of us new. He makes each one of our days a new opportunity. He makes each one of our moments of our vocations a new opportunity. And so there's this endless opportunity. As long as we're breathing and there's blood pumping through our veins, that's the cool aspect of Christianity. Kind of, I think the most amazing part of Christianity is that it's this endless opportunity for newness. Doesn't matter what the heck you did even 5 seconds ago or a week ago or a year ago, you can always be taking a step towards heaven, and like deepening in grace. And so you can always be a new creation. Every moment that you seek out God's grace, you can become a new creation. And yet, as nice as that sounds, as joyful and maybe cute even as that sounds, we don't really want it as badly as we seem to think we do. Or at least the lower parts of our human nature isn't really as comfortable with becoming a new creation as we might want to admit. Because we like being the old, we like being the old man that St. Paul talks about, that's like corrupt and comfortable with vices and being lazy and just, screwing around doing stuff we know we shouldn't be doing. We're comfortable with lust, we're comfortable with greed, we're comfortable with pride, we're comfortable with just having envious, hateful thoughts against everybody around us. We're comfortable with gossiping, we're comfortable with self-destructive behavior, we're comfortable with addiction, we're comfortable with overeating and just binging shows when we should be doing something productive. We're comfortable with all those old things that are the signs and kind of our inheritance from Adam, the old Adam. But the new Adam is offering us this opportunity to have a new, to become a new creation. And so it seems like, sorry, this is a long
No,
rant.
you're good, you're good.
But all this is to say is, it seems like complacency, part of it is really just resigning ourselves to the old way of doing things, to like, well, this is kind of how I've done things, or this is the sort of person that I am. Like, yeah, I'm not going to be productive right now. I'm going to procrastinate and waste time because that's just kind of how I operate. Or, yeah, I could resist this urge to commit this sin or give into this temptation or this lust or this addiction, but I really not the kind of person that resists temptations. I just kind of give in, so I guess I got to keep doing that. There's this temptation to be complacent and do that, or there's this more uncomfortable but way more joyful option to be like, no, actually, I'm gonna do the new thing. Like, I'm gonna do something different finally. And that's not comfy because that involves breaking past that sort of inertia where the basic law of physics, bodies in rest tend to stay in rest, bodies in motion tend to stay in motion. Whenever
Yeah,
we're like
dude.
trying to break out of complacency, it's sort of like we're resisting that natural tendency. We're trying to start moving after we've been at rest for way too long, or we're trying to take a rest after we've been moving in the wrong direction for so long. And so it takes that activation energy, which is a little uncomfy, but it's so worth it after just a few moments of change. I don't know.
Yeah, no,
I don't
you
know if
must have been
that's.
listening to my homily last week, 'cause I actually qu I said a thing t a helpful Yeah, measure is the law of inertia. like, are you in rest, and is it really hard to move? Because, like, that's naturally what happens in the spiritual life. We don't want to get out of that place we're comfortable or we're okay, or it requires challenge. And made me think of I've been reading Introduction to the Devout Life by St. Francis de Sales, and he has a chapter on purification from the affection to sin, not from committing the sin itself, but of just like the affection, our desire to sin, even if we don't sin. And I think that's a level of complacency that, like, I honestly like never think about really. It's like, oh, I'm not sinning, so I must be doing like okay, you know? And even
Right.
and not even like I haven't done the big bad things. Like, oh, I haven't even done like the other things, you know? But he says that, that forsaking the sin outwardly, there's people who haven't forsaken the love they still have for sin. That is to say, they resolve to sin no more, but it is with reluctance that they abstain from it and the delights that it gives them. Their hearts renounce it, but they frequently look back longingly. And just like I'm going to read from him for a second and then comment on, because I think this really speaks into complacency. He says, "Such people abstain from sin as a sick man abstains from dainties, which the physician tell him will be fatal to him if he eats them. He abstains, but mostly unwillingly. He talks about them, though, and measures how far he may transgress. At least he would fain behold what he desires and envies those who can indulge in what is forbidden to him. Thus, these weak, cowardly penitents for a while refrain from sin, but only reluctantly. They would be fain to be able to sin and yet escape condemnation. They have still all the taste for forbidden gratification and count those happy who enjoy it." And like, I know for
That's
me,
crazy.
that's super been true. Like, I know, like full honesty, I've like in high school or college sometimes, I would like be angry at God, be like, why did you create me and be raised in it, like a, you know, a Catholic, a practicing Catholic home where I feel bad about sin or I don't go to the parties that I would like to because I know it's not good for me. And it's not that I go because I'm like, I objectively like, no, that's not good. It's like, I can't go, you know, or I'm not supposed to, I'll get in trouble or God will be mad at me, you know, this very petulant kind of attitude. And, and Francis de Sales is saying like that you're like, you're not much farther away from the sin itself because you want it as badly still as you did even when you were doing it. And that's something really, that's a deep dig we have to make in ourselves in the spiritual life and in our like practice of morality and our desire to actually, we say in the act of contrition, I, you know, resolve to confess my sins, to do penance, and to amend my life. If we really want to amend our lives, it's not just amending what we do. It's amending like the inside, what it desires.
Right.
And if we're in complacency of like, well, I guess I just do or don't do these things, or I'm only not doing them because I'm Catholic and I can't, not because I choose to do it out of the love of God or love of neighbor. Or I go out of my way to go to adoration. I go out of my way to go to church, not just on Sunday, but other days, because that will actually grow my relationship with God. Instead of just doing like the Sunday obligation because I have to do it, is the real difference between one who chooses to do things for the kingdom and for God and for others, and one who does them simply by this sense of obligation. And obligation and complacency, I think, are very connected to each other.
They are, because case in point, the Pharisees at the time of Christ, right? They were people very strongly tied up with a sense of obligation, you know, more than anyone of their time period. They were the ones who knew inside and out every obligation of the law.
But
how did that awareness of obligation manifest itself in their spiritual lives? Clear complacency, right? It's funny, the law and the obligations which we have in our moral life and just in life in general, the law shouldn't be the end in and of itself. Like, the letter of the law should not be our aim and our goal to just fulfill the letter of the law. It should be much more like a standard and a rule, but kind of more like a minimum standard. It should be like a middling point where on below it, there's just totally ignoring the law, violating all of God's precepts and God's commandments for us. That's obviously wrong. But then above it, there's not like, if you're below the law, do people use above the law for when you're breaking it all the time?
They say you're above the law if you like, you don't think that the law applies to you.
Well, let's ignore that.
I get what you mean. Like, what I'm below saying. As so if like, the, there's a barrier.
Imagine it's a bar, right? The law is like a bar, right? Yeah. You're below it if you're failing to meet it. And that's because, you're not caring about the law at all at that point because you just want to do what you want to do. But I think the best goal in our lives shouldn't just be to hit that bar, to hit the law, but actually to be so much above it, so high above our sense of obligation, that yet again we're actually not caring about it. Just like someone who's always violating the law, like someone who's totally given themselves over to sin, a saint is also somebody who isn't really thinking about the law much at all either, because the opposite reason, because they aren't concerned with just meeting obligations. They're like, they're just concerned with their romance with God. They're like, I'm so head over heels in love with God, and I want to reach heaven and reach beatitude, that I'm not thinking about whether or not I can get away with this or that sin, or whether or not, well, this is technically venial or blah, blah, blah. In this circumstance, I can get away with it. They're just like, no, I want everything that's going to lead me to God, and I want nothing that's going to lead me in any way away from him, or even towards just a lack of motion. They always want to be progressing. And not to say you need to go and do hyper-scrupulosity and just think, the more radical I can be and overthink every single action I take, that's obviously the path to heaven. Like, no. But a radical love of God that motivates sort of this approach where you're no longer counting the cost of your actions and you're just Yeah. Willingly doing these things, not because you have to or because anyone's expecting you to, but simply because that is how you're going to meet the love of your life, God. That's how you're going to reach heaven.
Which,
Yeah.
yo, do you have one more thing? Go ahead.
No, I guess the only other thing I was going to say is that, to be fair, is part of a lifelong process, like getting to that point. I mean, what we're describing here is partly a transformation from what we'd call imperfect contrition to perfect contrition, or I guess the purgative way up to the unitive way. And that's really a lifelong transition, but it can be done because we believe that saints were ordinary people in a way.
Well, and it's like, we use the analogy of marriage to start a lot of, we would hope that, the husband and wife 10 years down the road love each other for very different reasons than they did when they first started. Yes, they know more about each other and hopefully they love each other. Like, right, that's the same thing with God. There's reasons that we're motivated, hopefully, to do things that are right more for the love rather than just because I'm supposed to. And I thought it was during Vespers tonight, actually, and I didn't realize it was even connected to the idea of complacency. But the movie series The Purge, there's like several of them, where basically the premise is the U.S. passes like makes all law or all crime legal for 24 hours in order to, like, I don't know, get it out of people's systems or whatever. And I thought to myself today, as I was meditating before Vespers, like, if there was a spiritual purge, would I not sin? If God said, like, oh, you're allowed to all sin for 24 hours, and I'm just going to look the other way, and I won't hold any of against you, there'll be no consequence of hell. You're allowed to do whatever you want. Would I really not do whatever I wanted? And I think the answer to that question then really answers how much you really love God or not. And I would be like fully honest, like, I don't know. I really think I'd be like, if everything is allowed, then like, let's
Well,
go,
if anything is allowed, I think, yeah, many more of us than we'd want to admit would totally take that opportunity.
So I just like, wow. Okay. And that's like what you said, like, this is not like a one and done thing. It's like an ongoing. That's why I like saying we move in the opposite direction of, we move in the opposite direction of complacency, not that we just stop being complacent. We start taking steps, like you said, like momentum. Momentum builds slowly. You don't just have zero momentum and then 100%. So whatever it is today we need to do to, like, take one step farther away, one step closer to heaven, one step farther away from hell. And whatever it is, to not stop moving. Even if the step is really small and really slow, it's at least still forward. Because if we're comfortable where we are in our spiritual life, if we think we're good, we think we don't really need to do anything more, we're comfortable in our relationships with other people, like, it's good. I don't need to really be challenged by them, or I don't need to forgive them, or at least I tolerate it, or my understanding of sin or my knowledge of God is good enough. I know enough. I've learned enough. I do enough. If we're comfortable there, this is what I told my congregation. If we're comfortable there, guess what? So is Satan. He is comfortable if we're comfortable, because he doesn't have to worry. He'd actually rather have us still going to mass than not, if going to mass makes us think we're doing enough. And yeah, so.
No, absolutely, dude. I love that you said that because you're right. We have to have spiritual momentum because whether we realize or not, we're always in some state of motion in some direction. And if we're not taking steps towards the direction of heaven, then we are going to hell. This is really the only two options. There's ultimately only those two destinations. And newsflash, this is maybe very unsettling to people. One of the sad, maybe the saddest effect of original sin is that our default setting is not towards heaven. Our default setting is hell. So we should know, there's a lot of visuals you might see. At least I remember seeing them as like a kid in some sort of catechetical book, where it shows a man on a path, like a sidewalk, and the path splits into a Y. And on one hand, on the right, there's, you know, the beautiful gates of heaven, and everybody's having a party inside. And then on the left, there's the fiery gates of hell. And he's kind of looking at this Y in the road, this fork in the road, and deciding which path should he go down, like as if he can kind of just stand there,
yeah,
right? And then eventually start walking in one of them. Really, we shouldn't visualize it that way. We should visualize it more like the dudes on, I was just in an airport the other day, and they have those moving sidewalks,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Just imagine it like that, where the dude is on a moving sidewalk, and behind him, there's hell, and ahead of him, there's heaven. And if you don't, I don't know if for people, well, okay, actually.
Do you go on it in reverse?
I just totally threw myself off because I go on it in reverse for fun, just to get a little cardio while I'm going through the airport. Scratch that. Think of it as a treadmill, okay? You're on a treadmill.
Yeah,
behind you is hell. Ahead of you is heaven. If you just stand where you are, you stay where you are, you stay with the same practices you've always done, you stay with the same depth of relationships you've always done, and the same, you know, casual, purely formulaic devotionals, you are moving backwards. You need to progress to be a saint. We all do. And I say you, I mean me.
We, yeah.
We need this. It's spiritual entropy, man. It's a law of thermodynamics, is that things are tending towards chaos. This is a physical reality. It's been revealed through science, but I think it's also something that God has set up within his creation as a image of a spiritual reality, that just as in the physical universe, things tend towards chaos, anarchy, and ultimately destruction, unless you have life and you have conscious energy that is put into things so that they actually overcome that entropy. Zach, same story for spiritual life. We're tending towards entropy, we're tending towards chaos, and ultimately that's the domain of the evil one. It's sort of like we're spaceships, just to use another metaphor, traveling through space near a black hole, right? Black holes suck all things towards themselves unless you make some sort of actual effort or ability to escape its path and get out of its orbit. Same stuff with spiritual life. Like we need to progress, or else we're constantly going farther away from God.
Yeah, that's why
complacency is so bad. It's because it's sort of this deceptive virtue where it sounds, or sorry, this deceptive vice, where it sounds like, oh yeah, it's not being, you know, a A plus.
Right. Yeah. It's settling Catholic. For C average.
It's sort of being like an A minus or a B plus, but like, it's not that bad. It's like, no. It's a devious little vice that is leading you towards ultimate failure. It's not just passivity. It's really entropy.
Spiritual entropy. I like that image.
Sorry, that was a bunch of little metaphors.
No, I like that. No, that's a great way to close. Just like giving a lot
just
of images.
Just trying to find some way to communicate the idea of always moving in some direction.
So if you're listening and you're kind of like, ugh, that's been me, or that is me now, don't lose hope. Don't despair. We can always make the next right step right now. But let's not wait till the future, because the future we don't know for sure. What we do know is that we have right now to do something. And I convict myself in that. You know, there's the Ben Franklin quote, "Why put off till tomorrow what you could do today?" I often jokingly say to myself, "Why do today what I could put off till tomorrow?" And that doesn't work in the spiritual life, because tomorrow might mean Christ knocking at the door asking, "What have you done to love me?" And if the last thing I did was something with a half heart, or no heart at all, then, you know, could I really say, "Jesus, I know what your voice sounds like"? So if there's, you know, whether it's someone you need to talk to, forgive, there's a sin you need to like really actually face, or half measures you need to stop taking, or some prayer that you should really pick up and you just haven't because you don't really have a good reason. You just, you don't have a good reason to start. Find that reason. Now, the reason is your soul, actually. You don't really need much more of a reason. That's just the encouragement I give. So I don't know, Nate, if you have any final thoughts.
I would just agree with that. I feel like I yapped too much, but I would totally agree with what you just said, and we all could stand to take on those resolutions a little more for ourselves. Especially, I think one little resolution is just to take a few moments to ask ourselves why we're not doing some of the things we know we should be doing, or why we haven't made a few changes in our lives. Because often, when you break through some really silly excuses, or not even fully developed excuses, but like these kind of half-baked, half-formed excuses in our minds, we realize there's really no reason why we haven't developed, say, certain habits of prayer, or why we haven't cut certain bad habits out. Like for me, I remember this. There's one phase in college that was like this, where I honestly, I think, reflected on it too late, but I was thinking, why am I not doing this or that form of prayer? Or why am I not making time at this certain time of day to, it was actually a specific time of day. Like, why am I not setting aside that particular time of day to pray? And I was like, well, I have a 1 p.m. class. Like, I was thinking about a time that was around noon, it was around lunchtime. I'm like, well, I have 1 p.m. class and I got to be ready for that. And then I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, but do I really spend that whole lunch break time preparing for class? It's like, no, I spend a lot of it like talking or kind of like just messing around for a little while. And it's like, well, I got to eat lunch. And then I think to myself, well, do I spend that whole time eating lunch? No. And it's like, well, it's just like the chapel's kind of far away. Like it's a whole 4 minute walk from my dorm. And it's like, yeah, but I would, without a single thought, scroll on my phone for 4 minutes, not even give it a thought about how that's wasting the exact same amount of time, or double that or triple that time. So after just a little reflection, I realized there was literally no excuse. There was just this vague combination of excuses that seemed to make a whole argument why I just didn't have time for prayer. And in fact, it was total BS. So I think we need to challenge ourselves and be like, what are all the little excuses or weird aggregate excuses that we kind of build as these vague defenses against our own, or defenses for our complacency? So you got to break those down, name them out loud, journal them, write them down, and be like, this is BS. This is BS. This is BS. I have no
Honestly.
excuse.
And then I think too, and if that doesn't convince us enough, is to then like admit I'm coming up with all these excuses because I am unwilling. I am unwilling to do otherwise. And hopefully, if you can admit that you're unwilling, that should shake your and be like, that's a problem. That's we I if I'm unwilling, then like what am I doing?
Like, oh wow, I actually have a vice here. I'm actually lazy. Yeah. Excuses are just thinly veiled vices. It's just a vice that we don't want to admit is there, so we give it a different name, like, oh, I'm too busy, or oh, I'm this, or oh, I just can't
I
make
need to
this change in my
prioritize
life
something
right
else.
now. Yeah, it's like, no, just call a spade, you just don't care enough about God. And you don't want to be in heaven enough right now. You need to change that.
Ooh, yeah, dude, that's real.
Yeah. Only able to talk firmly about this stuff because I'm accusing myself.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, wow, I,
I'm
yeah.
confident because I'm very familiar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it, Nate. And it's good to hear your voice, and I hope
Yeah, dude, it's been too long.
the
My
listeners.
slightly congested voice.
Hey, mine too, dude. I've had like the same cold for like 5 weeks.
Really? I'm
Yeah,
sorry, bro. It's crazy.
it's not fun, but I hope you all enjoyed today's episode. If there was something you did appreciate, leave a comment on Spotify or on Apple
100%.
Podcasts. Send us an email if there's like a topic you'd like us to cover that we haven't heard yet. Check out our YouTube channel, The Benedict Project. Many of our most of our podcasts these days are on there. And there's lots of other videos, monastic content, including a new series on monasticism and pop culture, where I tease out monastic themes in books, TVs, movies, and music videos. That's all I
Excellent.
got. So I hope you all have.
Bet.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying bet.
Oh, bet.
What
Okay.
up?
Bet. I hope you all have
Bet.
a wonderful rest of your day, and God bless you all.
Yeah, God bless. Don't be complacent.